Welcome to the rabbit hole. This is our first episode. We would also like to thank our two friends, Rory and Morgan, for doing the intro song and outro song, along with the cover art for this podcast. This podcast is basically just a true crime podcast where all three friends just gather and we talk about cases. I'm Jenna.
I'm Bella.
I'm Kyle.
And yeah, this is the rabbit hole. So we're going to start off with our first case, which is Black Dahlia.
Yeah. I would like to start off by saying there are some trigger warnings. There are mentioned sexual assaults, violence against women, incest, and suicide. So if those bother you, please don't listen to this episode, and I apologize.
Also, just keeping with the trigger warning, we will always have one of those at the beginning of every episode. So if you hear that and there is something that we're going to be talking about that will trigger you, please take care of yourself mental health-wise. Like, that's probably something else that we'll probably promote on the show, but please. So yeah, let's get into the episode.
All right, so discovering the scene. We have Betty Bursinger. On January 15th of 1947, around 10 a.m., Betty Bursinger and her three-year-old daughter were walking to a shoe store when Betty and her daughter came to an empty lot on Norton Avenue, which is now in L.A. Quote, I glanced to my right and saw this very dead white body. My goodness, it was so white. It didn't look like anything but an artificial model. It was white and separate in the middle.
Well, okay then.
So early life, Elizabeth Short was born on July 29th, 1942, 24, my God, in Hyde Park, Massachusetts. She was born to Cleo Short, who was her father, and Phoebe Mae Short, her mother.
Okay.
Elizabeth was one of five daughters. Her father was a miniature golf course designer. However, the Great Depression hit in 1929. Her father left and proceeded to fake his death.
Me too.
Was that a big business?
Like, what?
I mean, back golf? I assume it was
big. Like course designing for it?
Maybe.
I guess because it was like newer.
Maybe. I guess now it's just like pretty copy paste.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like there's not very many, like, well, just in general.
Yeah.
But,
maybe a
castle,
yeah.
Pirate ships, those are a thing.
Dinosaurs.
You know, random things.
Elizabeth's mother was left to raise the five girls on her own and worked multiple jobs. When Phoebe received a letter from Cleo saying he was now lives in California and he was sorry. He said how he wished to return home, but Phoebe refused and said she would never wish to see him again.
I mean, me too.
Yes, I am. What if me? Elizabeth's father offered
her child support, though.
Yeah, what happened with child support, though?
Listen, back in the 1920s, I don't think that was the concept.
Child support? Don't know her.
Never knew her. So later on, Elizabeth's father offered her residency, and she moved out to California when she was 18 in 1943. Elizabeth and her father's relationship became strained because Elizabeth was lazy, her poor housekeeping habits, and her dating led to her moving out.
I mean, hey, if you're going to comment about me not keeping your house clean, screw you.
Yeah.
It's not my house, Dad. Leave me alone.
God, Dad, how dare you ask me to be responsible?
How dare you ask me your choice? Oh my God, it's not like I'm living out of this room for free or anything.
It's not like you left me and you're offering to see Brenda's and ugh!
I mean, to be fair, he did leave, so, like, why should she listen to him in the first place?
Daddy issues in their prime.
Shit.
Elizabeth wanted to be a movie star, but as many before her, she struggled to do so and worked as a waitress and a cashier to make ends meet. She had one incident with the law on September 23rd, 1943, when she and a group of rowdy friends were made a disturbance at a restaurant and the owners called the police.
Rowdy friends.
Can I have a more detailed definition of rowdy?
I'm assuming they got too drunk.
Like,
or
rambunctious?
They
or
were
sexual.
Having fun. Whoa, hold on, pause.
Listen, there's like two contexts to that.
Listen,
I don't think they meant rowdy in the sense of like people were like, you know,
I don't think they
being sexual.
Well, no, but like maybe
they
were getting
they
touchy
like,
for the public eye.
Nah, listen, I think they meant like they had a little bit too much to drink and some girls were dancing on tables, and honestly, I'd be right there with them.
Listen, WAP back in the 1920s was
Yeah, they had WAP and it was a different version in the 1920s. You're welcome.
It's really traveling. Short was underage at the time, and she was booked and fingerprinted but not charged. An officer felt bad for her and sent her back to Massachusetts, but she used to return to California. This time she made her way to Hollywood.
I like how she moved from Massachusetts to California, was like, screw you, Dad, then got caught by the cops, and then moved back to Massachusetts and was like, yeah, I'm gonna get caught by the police again, and move back to California.
This man helped me out. I'm gonna not listen to
him. I'm gonna not listen to him and move back.
Yeah.
Nice.
So after she returned to California, she met Lieutenant George Flickman and fell in love. She made plans to marry him until he was shipped out to Europe.
Don't do it.
It took a few modeling gigs, but overall felt discouraged with her career. While visiting family back in Miami, she fell in love with a pilot named Major Matt Gordon. Gordon promised to marry her once he returned from India, and then was killed in action.
Oh, nice.
She was again heartbroken and reportedly. She was heartbroken and reportedly told others that the two were married and had a child who died in childbirth.
Oh.
And then after recovering, she attempted to get back her life back together by returning to Hollywood. She reconnected with an old friend and the two fell in love again. Back in LA on January 8th, 1946, in San Diego, according to her friend, Mark Hansen and Elizabeth had been worried about something when questioned by Mark Jemison, a detective. Hansen said this. Emerson, while she was living in Chancellor Apartments, she came back to the house and got mail. Hansen, I didn't see her, but she was sitting there one night when I came home with Anne, wife, about 5:36 o'clock, sitting and crying, saying she had to get out of there. She was crying about being scared, one thing and another, I don't know.
Did he not do anything to help her?
It's from what I heard, she was literally just kind of sitting there, and he's like, what's wrong? And she's just like, was freaking out.
Ah, yes, like a good friend.
Communication zero.
Communication levels zero. But, I mean, I guess that makes sense. In, like, the 1920s, nobody was like, oh, yeah, mental health or anything, or, like, learning to communicate with people. What was that? Don't know her.
This could be really important to the case, but we're just going to swipe that under the carpet.
Yeah.
You know.
So while she was doing housework for a French family, Elizabeth continued her partying and dating. One of these men Elizabeth enamored was Robert Brett Manley, an LA salesman who had a pregnant wife. The two saw each other on and off for a few weeks, but supposedly never had relations. Short asked Manley for a ride, and he agreed. He paid for a hotel room for them, and they shared it platonically. This was January 8th, 1946.
Yeah, platonically.
I mean, from what I said, they said, like,
alright, but was it actually, like, okay.
Well,
I feel like was it actually platonic
or was it not? Portrayed as
I'm doing air quotes. Platonically.
I think the people knew that.
According to,
like, man or woman, like.
Yeah.
According to this, she slept on the chair and he took the bed, which I think is just rude. Like, well, I can't.
Yeah, why didn't she take the bed? No.
Well, it was a comfy ass chair.
Alright, guys, keep your fucking 1950 value.
No, but, like, seriously, like, I wonder if it was genuinely, like, platonic, or if it was, like,
everything I've seen, it looks like it actually was platonic, but I kind of think they will think going on, but that's just me personally.
I mean, if they saw each other multiple times and his wife was pregnant, like,
maybe he's not getting coochie.
Seems sus. Well, that's not true.
He was not getting coochie if she was pregnant back in the 1940s.
Okay, fair.
So the next morning, Manley took Short to the Bitmore Hotel to meet with her sister. Manley did not stay, and he was the last to saw her. She was making him a phone call in the lobby. She was reporting 6 days later, and her body was found. So this is just a fun fact. So I know the Bitmore is supposedly haunted, and guests have reported that Elizabeth's spirit walk the halls and disappear into walls.
Did she ever check in?
No, she was literally just there to meet her sister.
Oh, all right.
So I actually have some pictures from the crime scene, which I'm going to get into in a second. I'm pulling those up, so I can show you two in just a moment. So her body was laying face up, and she was naked. She was cleanly cut in half at the waist with surgical precision. She was ollie posed with her eyes open, elbows bent, arm raised above her head, so legs open.
Mikhail's having, like, a mental breakdown right now. I don't know what he's trying to do.
He saw a little earlier. And I had a piece of my slice, and it was just next to me, and it's gone now.
Oh, I thought you were done. I threw it away.
Oh.
Anyways, continuing.
I'm sorry.
It's okay.
So she was hit over the head. Her body was drained of blood. At the corners of her mouth were 3-inch cuts. Chunks of flesh were missing in several parts of her body. There was no semen found on the body, but there were numerous crisscross patterns cut in her pubic area, as well as her pubic hair having been removed one by one.
Takes the time to do that?
Sociopaths.
Okay.
So I have the crime scene photos here if you guys want to see them.
Yeah, this doesn't sound fun.
What time is it?
It is 7:14.
I'll pass.
Okay.
I'm good.
Okay, I know you've seen them before.
Here. I've seen them before, but it was at like 5 before.
Yeah, we're idiots and we're recording this again, so.
Alright, so my episodes, most of them won't be related. Like, most of them won't have very many trigger warnings because I can't handle gore. So
plot twist. I'm a special effects makeup artist.
A lot of mine are gonna be more just like fantasy based and true crime.
We're gonna post an episode later on about like basically what the show is and just about us.
Yeah.
So you'll hear more about that. Yeah. But that's just a little tidbit from Mikhail.
Mine's gonna be more like mythology fantasy based.
Yeah, we'll have later episodes. It's not all gore and horrible things.
I promise there won't always be trigger warnings.
Yeah.
So, I'll be your rainbow in the dark, baby. Just kidding.
So investigators believe she was tied down and tortured for several days due to rope marks on her wrist, ankles, and neck. Most of the mutilations were done to the body after Short was killed. She was killed and the body was cleaned somewhere else before the body was left.
They know for a fact that the mutilations happened after she died?
Yeah, so I don't take... I don't take forensics, so I can't say why.
We talked about it in vet tech for a bit.
Yeah,
because we had a small 2-day unit on like necropsies and stuff.
Okay.
And like I think it's something with the tissue feeling different. Yeah. I don't really remember. It was a while ago.
That makes sense.
I think it was really early last year.
Yeah, I'm a college student. I don't know anything.
If anybody is in forensics or would like to help us figure out how that works, please comment.
Yeah, please call me out on my bullshit. Yeah. I'm like pretty sure I'm wrong. But.
Yeah, no, there is a way because I just watched Criminal Minds. But there are ways to tell. I think it's how old they are. I guess you can say. Or,
that would make sense.
Or if there's something in it, you could probably tell. Mm-hmm. So Betty Bursinger went to a nearby house where she called the police and then continued with her errands.
Yes, I'm going to see a mutilated body, but I'm just going to continue on my merry way.
Yeah, she had a great day. Her 3-year-old was, like, tormented, but, like, it's fine. She's fine. It's so fine.
I would not leave my house for days after that.
Huh?
I would not be able to leave my house for days after that.
Oh my god, are you kidding me? No.
I'd see that body, I'd be like, all right. Here is my survival bunker.
So I'm just gonna stay here, lock the doors, eat food, and just call it a day.
And suddenly, I don't leave my house.
yeah.
The graphic nature of the body made this a top priority case, obviously. The police put a bulletin about Short that read, "Want information on Elizabeth Short between dates January 9th and 15th, 1947. She described 5'6", black hair, green eyes, very attractive, bad lower teeth, fingernail chewed to the quick. Investigators believe the killer did know Short because the mutilations to the body showed this was a personal killing, not random. An FBI profiler, believed the killer had some emotional attachment to her, and the horrific display of her body indicated the killer wanted the world to know what wrong she had done to them. In another attempt to understand the killer's mind, expert named Dr. Paul DeRiver suspected the killer was possibly sadist, and this was his way of dominating Short, quote unquote.
It's a weird way to dominate somebody.
Well, with a lot of cases, I'm not gonna say this is like a stalker incident, but like a lot of times with stuff like this, when you're like, especially stalker cases, when you're torturing that person, that is your way of dominating them. Your fear is what they get off on. So it makes a little bit of sense. I mean, it doesn't make sense, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, it's understandable if you're thinking
something like that. Like, because if she, like, what she was worried about.
I think I've seen stuff about that,
Has, like, anything come up with, like, has anything, like, ever, look, been, like, what was that about? Or?
Some people suspect that they have been connected. Others, it's frankly not sure. This is why this is so unsolved, because they really don't know what happened. They don't know what she did or who she pissed off or anything like that. During the killing episode, he had opportunity to pump the effect from the two sources. From his own sense of power and overcoming the resistance of another, he was the master and the victim was a slave. End quote. DeRiver also suspected that the killer was a necrophiliac.
Nice.
Yeah. Anyway, so on January 23rd...
Consent is attractive.
You know, consent and not fucking somebody who's dead is attractive.
No, being a serial killer is also very sexy.
You know, really, consent's one of my turn-ons. But or no, maybe I should rephrase that. Not consenting, no.
What? How are you gonna throw? Hold on.
Wait.
Hold on.
No, I was gonna say not consenting is a turn-off.
Okay.
Okay. Well, let's just pause that and continue.
We're gonna edit that out. So on January 23rd, 1947, the examiner received a call from a man claiming to be Short's killer. The killer was said to be upset by the way the story was being told, if offered to send her belongings to prove their claim. The next day, the examiner received a package and a letter with the following: Short's social security card, her birth certificate, photos, business cards, an address book with Mark Hansen on the cover. It is noticed that some pages from the book were removed.
So this is kind of similar to like what the Zodiac Killer did?
A little bit. With the Zodiac Killer, he wrote them letters. He didn't...
Well, yeah, no, I know that, but I'm just like comparing the way that he was like, hey, I'm the killer, and then would send stuff to show that he like did it. But
with the Zodiac Killer, though, he didn't like give proof of it. It was more just like figure it out, have fun.
Oh, yeah.
In this deranged way. So he really didn't say, his whole thing was come find me and challenging them. This guy was just like, I don't like how you're presenting the story. This is how it actually happened.
Okay.
So the letter from the killer read, Los Angeles Examiner and other papers, here are Dahlia's belongings. Learn to follow. Hansen had allowed Short to stay with him for a period of time, and he became Blaze's prime suspect. Later that same day, Elizabeth's shoe and handbag were found in the trash. They were identified by Robert M. Manley, which made police give up Manley as a suspect, which doesn't make sense to me, but okay. More letters that were similar to the previous letter were sent in. A consistency of all of them were that they had written with newspaper clippings, and there were 13 in total. One letter sent by the Herald Express said, I give up in the Dahlia's killing if I get 10 years. Don't try to find me. The letters were believed to be from the killer, mocking the police in their search. The letters were often confusing and seemed to make no sense and led investigators to dead ends because all the fingerprints were cleaned off with gasoline. So there's a little hack for you right there.
I don't think people would consider that a hack, but okay. I mean, hey, if you're ever going to do something and you got to wipe down your fingerprints, clean it off with gasoline.
Candy bar, wipe it off with gasoline.
Well, it's funny too because I didn't even think that gasoline you could use to wipe fingerprints off of.
I didn't either.
There are some more graphic ways to do it. But
I know you can like scorch them off, but.
Yeah, you can scorch off your fingerprints, which I don't recommend. Don't do that.
Please don't. That'd be scary.
Kids, don't do that. Don't.
Yeah, but no, I'm curious how that would work because you guys know. Friend of our family's, their father's like fingerprints, they just kind of like started to disappear after a while as he got older, which I thought was really interesting. So it's kind of so gasoline is a way to clean off your fingerprints, which I didn't know.
I wonder if the gasoline would burn your skin though.
I don't even, maybe no, because the way that I was thinking about it was that he took the body and he like wiped it down with gasoline.
Yeah,
I don't think he like took his hand and like,
no. I mean, just in general, like when you're like. So he wrote the letters, and he obviously put it on the paper, I'm assuming. But I wonder if, like, it just in general, if gasoline would burn your fingers. I don't think it does.
I don't think it does either, and even if it did, he probably would have been wearing gloves.
Yeah. Anyway, so here are some suspects and theories. LAPD believed Elizabeth Killer was likely a medical professional or a butcher due to the manner in which her body was found.
It would make sense.
Yeah. Due to the manner and the case, the LAPD treated everyone who it was in Short's address book as a suspect. By June of 1947, police then questioned and released 75 suspects.
That's a lot of suspects.
There are so many, and the website I used for my research and some of the videos, they didn't give all, but I've seen there were like over 195 suspects, or even maybe more, and then they slowly like let more people go. Yeah. By December 1948, the LAPD had a total of 190 suspects, which I said before. About 60 confessed to the murder, only 22 were plausible suspects. So we have Robert M. Manley. He was a medical student, the last person to see Short alive before the murder. However, he passed two lie detector tests and had a solid alibi. He is said to have been attracted to Short, but the two never had relations. And he died on January 9th, 1986, after an accidental fall from his apartment. Balcony 39 years to the day he last saw Elizabeth alive.
That's interesting.
Yeah. I think I actually saw another thing too, and this might have been from one of the videos I watched as my research, but I think they actually gave him a truth serum. This also might have been in her case, but I'm pretty sure, I can't remember the name off the top of my head, it's some chemical that I can't pronounce, but like.
I do remember hearing about that.
It was like they injected him with supposedly a truth serum because we're at Hogwarts now. So next we have Mark Hansen. He was a nightclub and theater owner. He allowed Short to live with him on and off in October to May, and this made him a prime suspect. He was one of the last people to see Short before his disappearance. When questioned by the LAPD, he made several contradictory statements. When he was questioned about the address book with his name on, he said it was a gift and it was unused. He was also connected to some other suspects, but ultimately he was released and never charged for the murder, though he is still considered a prime suspect today. this is a little side theory. So on January 50th anniversary of the murder, Ralph Asdell was living, one of the last living detectives from the case. He claimed within weeks he had found the murderer. He claimed he had gotten a few tips from witnesses claiming to see a man in a lot where Short's body was found, and others reporting seeing a black car around dawn. This kind of connects to some of the other theories, but I'll get to that in a second. The owner of said car had recently had the car repainted and fit description. However, because Asdell had no solid evidence, he could not question the suspect. As in 1997, Asdell claims this was a Black Dahlia murder. Finally, we have my personal prime suspect, which is Dr. George Hodel.
Can I interject here real quick?
What?
So did he say who the like guy he found was?
No.
Or did he just like pop up like, hey, I found the murderer, by the way?
Pretty much what it sounded like when I was reading over this. It sounded like he kind of just was like, yeah, this is the guy, and then didn't give any information about who it was.
Oh,
alright. So
something happened to him, or was he just like, hey, I know who it is, and then just left?
I think for legal reasons, he couldn't say who it was, because you don't have evidence, you can't just... It's mostly you kind of just came like, I think you killed someone. It's like, okay, well, you need evidence to...
I mean, that's how I play Among Us, but...
Well, sadly, this is not Among Us, but...
I'd be such
this
a
is
great
real life, Mikhail.
Yeah, Mikhail, you sense of bastard.
All
right. Nice.
So,
listen,
no,
my big brain hours don't start for another, like,
you
4 hours, so...
Mine have left the building. So, Hodel was the first to become suspect after charges being accused for sexually abusing his 14-year-old daughter, Tamar Hodel, in 1949. You okay?
I'm cold.
Oh, Mikhail's cold, and he was like trying to mime to me that he was cold. But
I was trying to mime, like, can I have like a blanket or jacket?
I thought he was like trying to get my hoodie off of me, and I was like, no, leave me alone.
Hey, yeah, babe. Just kidding.
But anyways, continuing on.
Thank you. Mikhail's
our residential baby. He needs to be swaddled.
Listen,
apparently.
I freeze easily.
Okay, so tomorrow was he was suspected after charges of him accused for sexually assaulting his 14-year-old daughter, Tamar Hodel, in 1949. She was when she reported to the police that her father had molested her as well as other claims of sexual abuse from a young age. He had surgical training. He was said to be a friend of a surrealist artist named Man Ray and wanted to be an artist like him. He had a secret room the children were not allowed to enter. The way the body was posed was similar to a piece called The Lovers and a photograph possessed by MoMA called Minotaur. George Hodel is said to have had, he is said to have the same car as mentioned earlier. Police put Hodel under surveillance from February 18th to 1950 to March 27th of 1950. There were no developments until February 19th, 1950 when they heard, quote, at 8:25 p.m., woman screamed again. It should be noted that the woman was not heard before. End quote. Later that day, detectives heard Hodel on the phone saying, realizing that there was nothing I could do, put a pillow over her head and cover her with a blanket. Get a taxi, expire 12:59. They thought it would be something fishy, but anyway. And then they figured it out, killed her. End quote. And again, quote, supposing I did kill the Black Dahlia, they couldn't prove it now. They can't talk to my secretary anymore because she's dead. End quote.
Even if
so, he has so much stacked against him, and yet they still didn't arrest him.
Yeah. I'm gonna get to that.
Even if he didn't, like, even if he didn't do the Black Dahlia case, there's like,
he still killed somebody else.
Yeah,
oh,
he definitely
killed his daughter.
Murder,
oh, he definitely killed his,
like,
secretary. There's no doubt about that. But I'll get to that in a second because apparently there's some interest in why he couldn't have. But he was.
So did he know about this surveillance?
No, because it was police surveillance, so they probably hit cameras in his house or something.
Is that legal?
See? I wasn't even thinking of that. I was just thinking, well, obviously, to get the quotes from him on the phone, he obviously would have been, like, wired or something, which they can do. But my other thing was, like, maybe they had stakeouts or something at his house every so often.
Well, probably, but I don't think this is, like, in the movies or anything recently where it's like you have a van outside the house. I don't think they have the technology for that.
No, they obviously didn't, but they probably had some type of technology if they
yeah.
were able to wire or like do anything of that.
And at the very least, they probably had someone go undercover, but I'm not sure of that. I've never seen anything saying they were undercover. I just saw that they wired him. So he was questioned for his secretary's murder, but the case was dropped because according to one of the lead investigators, tapes proved the Hodel was innocent. I don't know if that makes sense, but okay. In 1950, George
Mance is literally out here saying, yeah, I killed my secretary, but then they have proof that he didn't?
I had no choice to kill her, so I'm innocent. Like, I don't know. Yeah.
Actually, the tapes show that he was committing a different murder around the time Black Dahlia would have been killed.
He was actually off kicking puppies in a lake.
Oh my god! Imagine that was like the actual thing. It's like, bro, what? He should go to jail for that.
This guy. But in 1950, he moved to the Philippines. In 1967, a woman in Molina was found murdered, also bisected, which means kind of waste, and posed an empty lot similar to Black Dahlia. So Hodel's son, Steve Hodel, a former homicide detective, believed his father was George's murderer. Steve claims that George was living a half a mile from the crime scene. In 2012, Steve went back to the house with a search dog, another former police officer, and a production crew. The dog found evidence of human decomposition on the property, meaning it is a possibility that Hodel was not a stranger to murder, as we discussed. Steve also found two...
Good. Yay!
Steve was also found two photos of a woman who appeared to be short, but any test results were found inconclusive. So they send in once, and they're like, it's her, and they send in again, they're like, uh-uh. So they don't know.
Ah, yes, it's her. Wait, never mind, it's not.
Lies. So Steve believes his father knew about the LAPD's corruption and paid detectives and police to keep from being caught. Hodel is even quoted saying, this is the best payoff I've seen between law enforcement agencies. I'd like to get a connection in the DA's office. Quote. So the LAPD even... The LAPD has even admitted that much of the physical evidence is not in the case file, and it's unclear where it is and why it would be missing. And LA County Head Detective Stephen Kay says, I have no reservations about filing two counts of murder against George Hodel, unquote. And then Hodel returned to the United States in 1990 and died in 1991 at the age of 91. So,
interesting. Anyways.
That's really it, but any updates? Basically, the only updates are is there was a show about Tamara's daughter, who I don't have here, I think. But as of last year, in 2019, a short series called I Am the Night premiered on TNT and told the story of Fauna Hodel, Tamara's daughter, and tell the story of Fauna and try to uncover the story behind her birth family. The show is based on a book written by Fauna titled One Day She'll Be Broke, She'll Darken the Beginnings of Fauna Hodel. Fauna was given to a young black woman named Jimmy Lee and grew up believing she was a biracial. However, during the civil rights movement, she didn't believe she belonged to either side and decided to look for her birth mother to get answers. To this day, the case remains unsolved, but according to John Douglas, former head of the FBI Serial Crimes Division, with all the information we have about the murder, he says how he treated, spent time with the body, the case would be, quote, very solvable today. That's really it.
I mean, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if it was more solvable today because of all the advancements that we've made. But it's interesting because you would think at least, like, did he? He never went to jail, period. Like, for the assault of his daughter, for any of the other, like, acts that he had.
So what's so upsetting about this when I was reading over Fauna because I wanted to get more information on her. So basically, they went to court. She was, they actually sent her away to an asylum. And that's when she gave birth. I think she was 16 when she gave birth. So she gave her daughter to Jimmy Lee. And her exact quote from that was she thought she wanted her to be in a very loving family, which is why she wanted to give her to a black family. But other than that, I haven't really read anything about...
Because he assaulted her, she went to an asylum. Pretty nice. Much. Classy. But I'm also not
surprised.
Sort of
like, no, she's lying, she's crazy, and that's why she went?
No, it was basically just because, like, she accused... It was very... That's the thing. This was very public, and I think... I can't remember the magazine where I got this from, but they said it was very glam... It was very glamorized. It was very, like, out there, and it was kind of the hot gossip at the time. And I think, especially because it was the 1940s, early 1950s...
I don't like people... Like,
I know.
Someone's trauma should never be hot gossip.
That's the way they put it. It was
should
like,
not be, but.
Like, I'm pretty sure the exact words were scandal. This is not a scandal, it was a sexual assault case, but alright. They sent her away because she said her dad raped her.
I'm not surprised, though.
Which is awful, and.
Yeah. I'm surprised. What the fuck?
No, I'm not. I'm. It's awful, but I'm also not surprised given the time period that this took place in.
And don't get me wrong, and I have to say this for legal reasons probably, but it is said that Steve might have a conflict of interest because you know, obviously George was a piece of shit, so he might be a little bit biased in that. But given all the evidence, I truly believe it's
Yeah, all the evidence that's stacked against him, I feel like it shouldn't matter.
Yeah,
it really shouldn't matter if it was him at this point. He needs to go to jail. Or well, he needed to, I guess.
He needed to go to jail for a lot of reasons. Yeah. This is just another one of them.
Sadly. And yeah, it really sucks up, so we can't figure out who actually killed Elizabeth and obviously a lot of the Dean.
Feel bad for a lot of the detectives working on that case.
Yeah, I mean...
It's like you put your all in your work just for them to be like, nope.
And sadly, there's a lot of cases where detectives are like, I feel like I knew who it was, but I couldn't say because I didn't have enough evidence. And that really sucks because you can't, like, bring these poor people to justice and... It's just awful, but, you know, sadly, that's the case, and, yeah.
No, I mean, yeah, it's really messed up, and it's, I feel awful for some of these detectives because, you know, they spend, like, you know, months, you know, however long that they need to,
years.
Trying to solve these cases for these families and for these people to get justice, and then for the fact of the matter of that, you know, this man, he literally paid off cops, like, and that's awful, like, you know, he should have gone to jail for the assault of his daughter, for the murder of his secretary, and for possibly being the murderer of Black Dahlia, and the fact that he didn't is disgusting.
Yeah, and I mean...
Were there any other butchers / medical professionals on the...
From what it seemed like, no, besides...
Besides George Dilsey, well, like I said, there was a little room they weren't allowed to go in, and I think there was even... One of the photos I saw, it actually looked like that Elizabeth Shore was in the photo with him, so they suspected that they may have had a relationship, and then, for whatever reason, she may have wronged him, or he just... Obviously, this guy's a sociopath.
I feel like if she had... Yeah, exactly. I feel like if the only way that she had wronged him was, like, she ended up, like, wanting to end their relationship,
or whatever
they had,
it may have been,
like, then, yeah, maybe, but still, like...
Yeah, sadly, it's not clear, but, this isn't just...
But he seems probably, like, the most...
Yeah, and this is only one of many quotes that the LAPD has been known to be pretty sketchy, because I think they're so notorious for it. I can't think of another case, but, like, yeah.
Yeah, if you, like, look back at, like...
It was very, very apparent.
These times and, like, how... Yeah.
But, yeah, that's really it. I'm so sorry that was the first episode.
No, I think it went pretty okay. I mean, I don't know.
I mean, it's also, like, almost 8 p.m., and poor Jenna looks like she wants to go to bed.
I'm so tired. Listen, it's been a hot minute, but, this is the first episode, similar to Black Dahlia, we'll be doing a lot of cases that are true crime. Kyle, like he mentioned, most of his cases will be fantasy or fictional.
I'm also going to cover some paranormal stuff.
Yeah, we're going to have a very wide range of videos, and I promise not all this is going to be doom and gloom. We're going to come up with cool ideas, and if you guys have any...
ideas or
if you guys have any cases or if you have anything that you would like to hear us talk about and give our point of view, that would be really cool.
Yeah, or even just like if you just want to have an episode where we just ramble about whatever, go like comment.
Yeah, if you just want us to like take a day where we just like start talking and recording ourselves, we will happily do that. But
that was the first episode done.
Yeah, any finishing touches that we would like to talk about?
I guess part two of episode one will be out soon.
Oh, yeah, we're gonna probably do an intro video of just us and what this podcast will, like, consist
of. Episode
1.5. Yeah, episode 1.5.
Yeah.
But yeah, okay, we will see you guys next week. Bye!
Bye.